It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
To 2-2, and we've still got more than half an hour to go. And here's Ozil, Lacazette, Ozil! Yo!
Could have had that fight, but I'm gonna walk on sight. Man, I had to drop that mind. You're not gonna spit this time. Trying to work with a good energy. Man,
you're
gonna work with a bad man vibe. None of these guys could
do
that.
It's amazing.
Like,
it's Aaron Ramsey.
My shine. That's foul. Man,
that's
offside.
The response of Arsenal.
Man, cross the line. Score for my team in the time I play. Where better know when man's
Chelsea
inside. Man,
Chelsea simply
got
lost their focus
that.
In the joy of equalising.
Hello, welcome to another Touchy Gooners podcast, emergency recording today. We're basically recording it. You're basically going to be listening to this live, to be honest. So big up everyone that's tuned in. So we had a nice, it was a bumper. It's like an hour and a half episode recorded. Bear cast members, so Shabs was there, I was there, Sean, Lewis, even Anton dropped in for a bit, German Dan, straight after the Aston... Not the Aston Villa game, the Leeds game. But unfortunately, we've not been able to get the audio for that. So you got myself and Shabs here doing a recording on the day. Very special. We didn't want to leave the streets hungry, you know. Cool. So feeding the streets. So, you know, we've had two games to talk about and digest. Aston Villa, I think we'll probably spend more time talking about that. Maybe we'll touch on Leeds a little bit. Because obviously that's another nice win, a couple of talking points from that. But, you know, let's focus on the Villa game. Basically, Arteta essentially dropped Odegaard for Lacazette and Kieran Tierney injured. So it meant that Nuno Tavares stepped in. So, Shabs, what did you make of the lineup, the performance, and what do you think that can bode for the rest of our season?
Yeah, I think the lineup, the notable surprises were the two that you've mentioned, really. Odegaard, obviously a bit of a surprise. What was interesting is that Odegaard was dragged in the previous game. I think it was the Palace game, wasn't he, on the Monday night, and where he didn't play well at all, to be honest with you. And it was notable that he and Arteta were having some dispute about something. So it was quite interesting to see what was going to happen there, whether he's going to play or not. He didn't play. I can't remember if he featured. Did he come off the bench?
Who?
Against Odegaard.
He did come off the bench, yeah.
Against Villa. So he did feature. But he didn't start the game, obviously. But, you know, there was talk about it there being not just technical reasons, but there were, you know, talk of him carrying a niggle injury or something. So, and then, of course, he didn't feature at all in the second game against Leeds in the Cup, which we'll come on to. But that's an interesting one for me because, you know, this is a big signing for the summer, from the summer. We obviously had him on loan the back end of last season. We've gone back and forth about him in the group chat and online. And I kind of want to know what's going on there. But that said, we didn't miss him too much. Definitely not from the way that we played the game. I think Lacazette coming in as not a like-for-like replacement for him, but a replacement and someone who actively filled the void in the centre of the park, higher up the pitch, but also coming to drop deep and connect play. I think that worked really well for us. I liked the introduction of Lacazette. He hasn't featured much this season, save for cup games and sparing moments in matches. I think he warranted some sort of game time, especially as he saved us in the previous game against Palace, I think, you know. And yeah, whilst he's not everyone's favourite centre forward, he's not the most prolific striker and whatnot, he is a goal threat. So, yeah, man, I was happy to see him. I spoke about Lacazette negating Aubameyang's deficiencies, and I think vice versa as well. So what you kind of want from, I suppose we don't have the complete skill set in one body. What we have is like a combination of attributes across two good players, which they both are, and them playing together seems to, the way they played together seemed to complement them well and seemed to work for us. So I was happy with that as far as the lineup. The other introductions in the lineup were Tavares and Lokonga. Tavares played very well for me. It'll be interesting to see what happens moving forward, but I liked him. I liked how dominating he was surging down that left-hand side. He's just like a PMP machine, isn't he? So there were times where he looked unstoppable going forward. I really liked that. I think part of that is his game, but part of that was just that Villa didn't do much to stop him or us attacking down that side at all. And I think Sambi Lokonga as well came in and also played very well. It was an encouraging performance from him.
Yeah, yeah. And some good points there, man. I feel like, you know, the onus in dropping Odegaard, I think that was like a big statement from the manager to say that, you know, I'm trying to play a certain way and you're not necessarily allowing me to play that way. Because I feel Odegaard, he's sort of similar to Ceballos in the sense that when he plays, the team has to play to his speed or to the team has to play his way. And in the games that we've played and the opposition that we played and the style that we're trying to play, I don't think that necessarily suits Odegaard for me personally. I think, you know, in some of these games that are going to be coming up, where we're going to be playing against deeper blocks, teams going to sit two banks of four, let us have the ball. I think that those are the type of situations that suit Odegaard. But you see, where teams want to press us high, they're going to leave a lot of space in behind, and they're susceptible to the press themselves, and allow us to sort of play on that transition, that broken play. I'm not sure those are the best games for Odegaard. I think he can probably learn to play in them because technically he's very good and he can be able to, you know, sort of release the ball very quickly. But where he is right now, he likes two or three touches. He likes the ball to come into him. He likes to be able to turn on it, scan, and then play the pass. And if you look at the other players around him, it's very much, you know, more all action, ESR, 1-2 touch. Aubameyang, he doesn't like more than two touches whenever he gets it. Saka, he can do a bit of both, but he's probably better, you know, now running in behind, posting up his the left back 1v1. And I just feel like Lacazette probably suited that type of football a bit more, especially, you know, when you're trying to press high. I think Odegaard is a good presser. But, you know, once we actually get the ball turned over, you need them people to, you know, just release it quick. And, you know, maybe he'll get up to speed with that. But for the time being, I didn't really mind Lacazette doing that role. And I think, you know, it allowed us to really go for the jugular in that match. And I think it was really impressive, that first 45 minutes especially. I rewatched that. And the way that we were just on their necks, you know, any loose ball, any second ball, they were munching, you know. Tomiyasu was playing very, very high compared to where he normally does. Tavares PMP was killing whoever was playing right back for them. Matty Cash was, you know, he was spinning, didn't know what had hit him. And then Partey Lokonga, the fact that they played much closer together, I think made a really big difference. So, you know, I think Lokonga had a really good game. Really good game.
Did.
You know, ball carrying, taking it past one or two players. And also on a defensive side, you know, he was right up there. He was right up for it. So what do you make of him so far? And how are you encouraged by that performance?
Yeah, I am. Sorry, Dad. And I just wanted to go back to Odegaard quickly because you made some good points about him as well. So do you think it's an acclimatization issue? Because what you're saying actually is accurate in terms of the time he's used to taking on the ball. He kind of dwells on the ball. He likes to, execute after having had a couple of touches. Sometimes they look like comfort touches as well. They're not a necessity. They just look like, one, two, three, which is obviously too long in the Premier League. And we've seen other players come and struggle to adapt to the pace of the game. Do you think that's what it is with him? Or do you think it's something different? Because you said, hopefully, it's something that he can learn. But I suppose we're in trouble if he doesn't learn it quite soon and adjust it. And also, it's a bit of a worry given that he already had these 6 months here before we signed him. So that's surely what, should have helped him to get up to speed. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's a funny one because I think there were definitely games last year where he looked good.
Mm.
He looked good. I think the Leicester game, Spurs game, West Ham second half. He was sort of running the show in all of those games. But I don't know. I just don't know. Because from what I'm looking at, I think it's not helped that we've sort of tried to play him deeper so far this season as well. Mm. I think he's definitely looked better in a more advanced role. But yeah, I think in those advanced areas, it's strange because you probably have a little bit more time than in the middle of the park these days in the Premier League. So once you're sort of behind the midfield, the centre-backs, the full-backs, they don't necessarily want to come, leave their position, come out and get you. They want the midfield to sort of sweep up. But in the middle of the park, all of these teams, they've got runners now. You look at, that Palace game, Gallagher was all over him.
Yeah.
You look at that Villa midfield, you got McGinn, you got Ramsey in there. Buendia was terrible, but you got Douglas Luiz in there, who's always at your feet. So when you're in that centre circle, it's 1-2 touch, or you need the PMP to be able to beat a man and beat that press. And I think that's where Ødegaard's probably lacking. So I think he needs to be playing more advanced, where he can get his head up a little bit more, because once he receives with his back to goal, he doesn't really have the PMP to sort of beat the centre midfielder and then get a pass, which he has to do when he's playing deeper. So, hopefully that's the last we see of that, of him in that sort of, that 4-3-3 where he's playing alongside Partey, whatnot. You get a proper centre mid playing next to him. Yeah, so...
No, fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah. And yeah, on Lokonga, we're talking about the Villa game. Obviously, yeah, because I don't think he didn't play Tuesday night, did he? No, he didn't.
No.
It was El Nene and Ainsley. So, yeah, Lokonga did well, I think it's not the type of performance for anyone to get carried away with, but it's the type of performance that you could be encouraged by. There's been some, I think, the split opinion about his signing, and not him per se as a player, but the necessity of his signing, and again the implication of it. So by signing him, someone who's not necessarily, who's good, he's got good attributes, he's been talked up, rated highly, he's been described as having a good mentality, but he's coming out of the Dutch league, and the argument for Arsenal was that they needed someone who was ready to play now, not be on this bit of a development journey. So I think that's what has really divided opinion about Lokonga. And then some of his performances to date, I suppose, have underwhelmed some sections. I think, he's had one or two bad games, but I think the rest of his games for Arsenal, he's kind of done what I've expected him to do. He's not really shined or set the world alight, but he's looked decent. And I think it was an encouraging performance from Lokonga against Aston Villa. Definitely in terms of the instruction, I think he was instructed to play closer to Partey. He didn't look isolated at any one time in the game, neither did Partey. So I think part of this is maybe, again, learning. I'm always talking about partnerships. It's a new partnership for Partey. It's a new partnership for him. It's a new league for him. So maybe part of it is learning to play with him. Part of it is the instruction. Part of it is the overall team performance. But I think he played well, man. I think he just played well without being remarkable or amazing. And he done the basics well, got his fundamentals right. You know, played a few good passes, but spoke about one disguised pass in particular that he played. I think it was in the first half. Yeah, it was in the first half against Villa, which I think was just fantastic. It's the type of stuff that we've seen in the compilations from him. We want to see them at the carpet. So, you know, come and look on. And I think he's just come off of his birthday week as well. So, you know, it's a good, it's a bonus.
Yeah, I think the Villa match was on his birthday, you know. So I think one thing that I do have to mention about Lokonga, and that I think is a big bonus, it speaks to his personality, speaks to his confidence, is that, you know, Palace, he came on, made the error for the goal, generally wasn't that impressive. And he said straight after the game, you know, I need to play another game and I need to make amends for that performance. And you know, he I think that's top mentality, you know.
Definitely
wanted to get straight back out there, took responsibility, and had the self-awareness to know that he didn't play that well. And then you know, against Villa the next match, he stamped his authority on that game, you know. Definitely. I think on the ball he's probably slightly better than Partey. I think that's been my sort of main criticism of Lokonga so far, is that, you know, when we saw the clips, we did the scouting, you know, he was spraying passes, he looked like a confident guy in Anderlecht, you know, that's his hometown, all of this stuff, you know, that's where he's used to. And then so far, obviously the Premier League's a different animal, so it's very difficult to expect him to, you know, show the same type of personality. But you know, that was the thing, that so when we're doing the comparisons with Guendouzi, I think immediately Guendouzi, you know, he was a big ego, you know, big personality on the pitch, stamping his authority on the game, winning us matches in his first season at 19 years old or whatever it was. And that was like, you know, you sort of want Lokonga to come and step in and play with a bit more emphasis, play with a bit more confidence. And I think against Villa, he was able to do that. So I want to give him, you know, a big shout out there for that. And hopefully, you know, he can build on that. He can show, like, look, Villa's midfield, they've got big men in that midfield, you know. And he slapped their heads. So, you know, hopefully he's able to build some confidence off that. And then go from strength to strength, because now he's 22 years old. Just had his birthday, so you know, we want to see a bit more from him. In the same vein, I want to touch on Ben White, because I think this overlaps both the Villa and the Leeds matches. So he came off against Leeds with an illness. So Arteta said he probably should be fine for the game against Leicester on the weekend. So. Looking at him, what do you make of his performances? Because obviously he had a tough time against Brentford, but you know, now we've seen Ivan Toney's giving everyone a tough time. It's difficult to sort of hold that one against him. But for me personally, I think he's looking decent. He's looking good.
Yeah, same. I think I have to concede on that. And it was never. It's never been Ben White isn't a good player. It's been, for the price tag that we've paid for this guy, we've definitely paid for the potential for what he could be rather than what he is currently. My thing is that for where we are, spending 50 million, you need instant dividends. You know, you need instant return. So when he played those initial games... especially that first game against Brentford, he looked awful. When you see, in hindsight now, Toney has dunked on quite a couple men, including King Virgil, you know, who probably is the best, like, pound for pound centre back in the Premier League. So Ivan Toney's made him look like a small boy, really. So really, I had to do some revisionism for Ben White. I think Ben White as well, some of it has been a confidence. So I bear in mind, and I've always had this in mind, that, you know, it was a long summer for him. He obviously went away. He didn't participate, really. I don't think he featured in the Euros, but was away. Then came back late, had the signing done. You know, that impacted pre-season. He hasn't really had a pre-season, let's be honest. Just kind of really come into it and not really play games. So I think it's a confidence thing and just acclimatizing to a new club, a new way of playing, new manager, new system, all of the changes that occur when a player transitions from one club to the next. Yeah. So I think they're fair. What I like is his partnership that he is building with Gabriel. I think they're looking quite solid and quite robust. They have moments, but for the most part, they've looked reliable. They've looked sturdy. I think they're starting to complement each other really well. And I think when you tailor that with Aaron Ramsdale and his command, and I say that with, inverted commas, but Ramsdale obviously cuts quite a commanding figure. He looks to be quite a vocal goalkeeper. You can overstate or underplay the importance and significance of that if you want, but at Arsenal it seems to be having an effect and some positive impact. And I think defensively, I personally, as a spectator and a fan, have been less worried about them this season. And it shows you where I've come, where I'm at the point where, because I was saying, like, I don't even realise, I haven't been stressing about Rob Holding mistakes. That's one stressor that's vacated my life. You know, it's something that I just don't need to worry about, Rob Holding making a mistake, Chambers in the side. So all of that back line, that defence has improved. Yes, Ben White's a part of it. I think Gabriel's been the better defender this season, definitely. But I'm at the point now where he came down injured on Tuesday, I was thinking, shit. And I thought, rah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
If I'm in a place now where I'm saying, shit, like, we actually need Ben White, we need this guy. Like, I've converted, I've accepted. That's it. He's a player that makes us better. Okay. There's loads more to come from him. There's loads more to come from him in terms of his game. There's still a question mark for me about his aerial prowess and how dominant he can be in the air. I think there are going to be teams who, you know, will target him and will try and dunk on him. But I think with the ball, I don't want to invest heavy in those stocks right now. But with the ball, yeah, he is quite competent with the ball at his feet. And these are the things that I was most critical about in the first couple of games that he played, where I didn't see any of this. I'm like, if we've signed him to be this ball-playing centre-back, but I'm not seeing him carrying the ball out, I'm not seeing him spraying no passes, I'm not seeing him look comfortable in possession. I'm not having it. What have we done with the 50 mil? But right now, I'm like, yeah, man, I'm quite with him. I quite like it. I think as long as the solid defensive structure and defensive results continue, then yeah, man, I'm with it. I'm all right with it.
Yeah, I think a lot has to be said about the partnership as well. With him and Gabriel. I think Gabriel, people had doubts about, you know, his leadership credentials there in that back line, but, you know, he's taken them on with aplomb, and I think it's probably improved him, you know, a little bit, having those leadership responsibilities in that back line. He's calling the line, he's talking a lot, and maybe it comes down to being able to speak better English. You know, because I think that would make a difference in communication, especially when you're talking about, you know, Ramsdale, who's very vocal back there. Tierney's very vocal back there. And then you got White and Tomiyasu there as well. So, you know, I think the fact that, you know, that language barrier seems to no longer be there for Gabriel has helped a lot. And yeah, I think they're forming a very, very good partnership. You know, I think Gabriel's unbeaten in the league this season. I think they've only conceded, you know, something like four goals in the league in seven games, so or six games, which isn't bad, you know, three clean sheets in there. So I think, you know, Ben White definitely deserves his props. This is a positive episode today, man. I know people say we're not that positive, but I think a lot of these guys are, I guess, doing their best to silence critiques. Because for me, I think it's very difficult for anyone to say that the Ben White fee is justified right now. So, you know, we park that one for now. But just in terms of his overall performances, I think he's been steady and I think he's been quite good in a number of games, providing us a solid base for us to build on. I know you've got a meeting that you will need to shoot off for in 5 minutes. So the last 5 minutes with you, I want to touch on Nicolas Pepe, right? I want to touch on his brother, right? Because basically, you know, we spent 72 mil on this guy. Saka is essentially taking his spot in the team. Willian took it last year. Then Saka, and then he sort of featured with no arrest in Saka rotational last year. The thing is, for me, I think he's getting a lot of opportunities to sort of make that position his own. But I think it's no coincidence that in the league, our two best performances by far and away have come when he's not been playing, you know, and he's not started. So Where do we go with him? What do we do with him? What's the solution here?
Boy, I think he's the worst signing in club history. Not the worst player that we've signed, but the worst signings, the worst business. I don't think there can be much argument about that, because, yeah, just for whatever reason, and sometimes you could say that it's legitimately been the coach responsible. Coaches have failed to get the best out of him or whatever. But there are certain things where you watch this guy play where you just say, come on, Pepe. Like, what was that? What were you doing? And those things are almost always like just his fundamentals, you know, like his first touch, like his execution or his lack of execution. You know, we talk about this guy being drippy and a wavy baller and him being able to beat players, but, you know, and then he it's so typical for him to trod on the ball and fall flat on his face like he did on Tuesday against Leeds. I think the thing for me are that he has done some positive things for Arsenal, but it's never enough. And like you said, it's never consistent enough. I don't think he's found any kind of consistent patch. And the thing is, you can argue that when he's not playing regularly or not being given regular opportunities, you could say, well, actually he needs form. Because that used to be my argument. And I've tried to, you know, find all types of reasons to buy Pepe more time and whatnot, But I just can't excuse it no more. Like you said, he's playing regularly. He's getting regular opportunities to kind of nail down the spot, and he just can't do it. And I think there's a reason why people, like, I'm not Arteta's biggest fan, but I think, you know, there's a part of looking objectively at Arteta when you think about his use of Pepe and his selections with Pepe and say, all right, you know what, fair enough, man. We can't really put everything down to the manager. Not that, like, this guy has to just be able to do certain things to the correct level. I don't know what level Pepe truly is as a player, but he's not Arsenal level, I don't think. He's not top six Prem level. Maybe he's not top eight Prem level. I don't know. So, yeah, I think we have to get rid of him. I don't think that we're going to be able to sell him easy at all, both for the fee and wages, because what fee is realistic to sell him for? Like, honestly speaking, like what's realistic and what's acceptable for us, given that we paid 72 mil and given that we're still making payments? We've still got about 40 mil
I think after this season, it's going to be 28 mil left to pay for 2 years.
So what do you accept? So I think, you know, it's a big fat L. I think you got to do the loan him out for season, try and get a loan with an obligation to buy. But I think he may be loaned out, not this season, sorry, for next season, loaned out for the next 2 seasons and see his contract out. And then he's free to move wherever, where he'll be, 26, 27? Yeah, so we'll be looking to move wherever. Wherever the understanding or acceptance is of the level that he's at by the time his contract with Arsenal runs out, then, you know, he'll make his next move from there. But it's a big L for us, man. And yeah, man, I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed as a fan because the brother is trash, man. He is. Like, there's no more masking it up. There's no more making excuses. Like, he's not good enough. He's not been good enough for us. Mm. No way.
Yeah, man, I can't disagree with anything you've said there, to be honest. And I think our only real possible exit would be a loan with option or something like that, where you loan him maybe for 10 million loan fee or something like that. With a potential 15 million option the year after, or obligation even, because my goodness, this guy, he's smelling out the joint. You know, like, I went to the stadium for the Leeds game, and I was late because of the tubes and whatnot. But I got in the ground. The first thing I see is Pepe receive the ball and fall on the floor. I just turned to my boy. I said, "Look, boy, this is gonna be a long day. You know, it's gonna be a long evening." Because let me tell you think the guy stinks on TV. Up close and personal, it's like a million times worse. It's painful. So, you know, I want to be balanced as well. I don't want to just slander Pepe. So I know that he got an assist in the game. You know, he does have some end product. You know, he can shoot, he can finish. But for me, what he offers in that respect is nowhere near enough to justify him having a spot in a starting lineup or even really having a spot in the squad. If you look at the stats, I think per 90, Saka has better goals and assists than him in that position. Which really says something, because that's supposed to be Pepe's USP. And Saka is, you know, a 20-year-old playing. He's not even played 50 games right wing. You know, that's the simple facts of it. It's less than 30 games, I think, Saka's played right wing. And his productivity is better than Pepe in that position in the league. So, you know, let's just call a spade and say that even that aspect of it, it's not working and it's not worth it. So, you know, we need to find a way to cut ties, because right now him and his wages and his position in the squad is preventing us from even bringing in a replacement right now, because you can't justify a man on 140k sitting on the bench. You can't justify a man that costs £72 million not playing, because at the end of the day, and the thing is, he's actually lucky that he cost that much, because, you know, if that was an academy player, if that was you know, a player that cost 10 million, he would not be getting these chances again and again. If Alex Iwobi was giving us these performances, you know, the crowd would be going nuts.
Psycho on him, man. Like, absolutely sick on him.
I think he's one that needs to go. But Shabs, I know you got to shoot off now. So thanks for coming on.
No problem, man. Just bless up to the listeners. Like, you know, like Dan said, we had to give you something, man. We couldn't let you go this Thursday without a little sign. So yeah, man, emergency pods, recuperation pod, whatever. But yeah, man, I hope you don't enjoy this one. But yeah, Dan, in the hours, bro.
Yeah, take it easy, man. Speak to you in a bit.
Cool.
Right, so guys, you're just left with me now. Danku. So, you know, rather than you just listening to my voice ramble on, my bare monologues and whatnot, I'll go through some of the listeners' questions that we have for this episode. So, you know, Twitter has been quite lively this morning. It seems that people have a lot of questions that they want answered. So I'm going to do my best to get through as many of them as possible. But a lot of questions are centering around this striker situation. So Alexis Kavkas, big up Alexis. He's got a good YouTube channel. Unfortunately, he's a Chelsea fan. So if that is your bag, make sure you go out and check him out. He puts out some good content. So he's asked, what the F is going on with number nines? Is Laka going to leave on a free? Eddie set to sign a new deal. Following Balogun just signed. What is their plan? Can't get my head around it. Heights with a triple or quadruple S. He asked, what are they smoking over there at the Emirates? After reports of offering Eddie and Nketiah a new three-year deal, what does it mean for Balogun? Loan away, where would you guys want to see him play? SWVG Lord 1, should Arsenal, since Laka will leave and Oba is getting on, sign one of Jonathan Davis, Marcus Thuram, since they're the ones that suit Arteta's game plan, young and have got PMP. So there's lots of questions around the striker situation. And AFC Jordan has also asked, could you see Oba getting a new contract at the end of the year? He'll have a year left. He's a captain and we have a young team around him. Is this a complete non-starter or something to take stock of in a year or so? And talking to Mush, big up Mush from Koppen. He said, Aubameyang won't last forever. If you could choose a source of goals in the future, would you choose a gunman nine or a goal scorer winger like Salah? Bayern are the only team who really have both. Lots of interesting questions. I think the striker situation is 100% a very difficult one. I think we've sort of made a few errors here in recent years, mainly with Eddie Nketiah. I feel like we've sort of had him in limbo because of this indecisiveness about what we're going to do at striker. Lacazette, I think they wanted to sell him, wanted to bring someone else in. They weren't able to shift him. And that has really caused sort of a domino effect in the striker situation. If Lacazette had been sold, I think Nketiah would have probably got a lot more game time than what he has done. And the fact that he didn't should have meant that we loaned Nketiah out. Because I think Nketiah has improved a lot in his all-round play. I think we saw glimpses of that in pre-season. And that's really without playing many games. And I think that's just him sort of getting his man muscles growing into his body and feeling more confident in his body. But with playing time, I think he could have improved further. So then if, you know, you can be in a position to make a choice around selling or keeping him. When you sell him, there's probably a sizable bid on the table, 20, 25 million if he scored some goals. England under 21 top goal scorer, all of that. There's a lot of clout in that Nketiah bucket to make a sell. But unfortunately, we didn't do that. Nketiah, I think, was supposed to go in the summer, was supposed to go to January before. January before we rejected, said he wasn't leaving at all for anything, didn't go on loan, didn't go to West Ham, who I think were interested. This summer, a deal was there to be done with Crystal Palace, and his agent and him decided they were going to stay and try and leave on a free. So that's a bit of a spanner in the works. And then obviously Balogun, he didn't want to sign because, you know, he wanted assurances about game time. And I think we can all agree that so far, those assurances have not been met. Didn't come on in either of the last two League Cup games, if I'm not mistaken, or I think he came on very, very briefly against Wimbledon. I think he got like 8 minutes or so, actually. And after the first game against Brentford, he's not really played. So for me, Balogun has to go on loan in January. I don't think we can make the same mistake that we did with Eddie there. And interestingly, they have the same agent. So the rumours was around Balogun wanted game time. Eddie and Lacazette were going to be sold. And then Balogun would then be able to take either that second striker role or that third striker role, depending on if we went out in the market and signed a striker. I think that made sense, but given his age, given his lack of experience, so it's a big burden on Balogun to even try and step in and produce. Very few 21-year-old strikers slap in the Premier League immediately. So I think the best course of action would be for him to go on loan and probably go on loan again the season after. I don't think, you know, we need to have these guys in and around the first team getting experience that way. When you're a striker, you need to be playing every week without pressure of scoring. When you're at Arsenal, you need to be scoring at a rate of 1 in 2, really, to make it here. So I think that's too much pressure to be asking for, you know, any, even an under 23 striker, let alone a 21-year-old striker. So yeah, it's a funny one. I personally cannot see the club giving Lacazette a new deal. I just don't think it makes any sense. I think it was clear that the club wanted to buy a striker in summer. And I think the main barrier to us doing so was Lacazette not leaving. You know, he's on 180k a week. I can't see them, you know, giving him more money, age 31, you know, going 32. I just can't see that. I think, you know, they need to just maximise whatever they can out of him this year. Good leadership, this, that and the other. But, you know, it's time to say goodbye. You've been here for 5 years. You've never really hit the heights that were expected of you. It's time to say goodbye. On Aubameyang, he won't last forever. But I think where people sort of have this misconception about him physically, I think he's still top. If you watch him run, you watch him sprint, all of these repeat sprints, as long as we protect him, I think he can give us another 2 seasons. So this season and next season up till the end of his contract. And then you can maybe think about giving him a year extension, depending on the makeup of our squad. If Nketiah is still here, then, you know, you might want to give him an extra year without that pressure of being a main striker or one of the main strikers. So I could see Aubameyang getting a year extension, but, you know, who knows? Striker situation as well. If we're looking into the market, we're having this discussion in the TG chat today. It's very difficult because the strikers that are out there, you know, your Vlahovic's, your Isaks, your Osimhen's, Tammy Abraham and all of these guys, you're basically looking to spend upwards of 60, 70 million pounds. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, I'll throw his name in there as well. You look to spend 60, 70 million pounds on a guy that you don't know is going to can come into this Arsenal team and bag. You know, I think that's a lot of money to spend on basically what's going to be a project striker. I think what we might have to do is look for a goal scoring winger, goal scoring number 10, or hope that Saka and Smith Rowe can turn into these guys. I don't think Ødegaard is really equipped to do that. And then hope that, you know, one of these guys can sort of come through. Otherwise, you know, what an alternative to that might be would be to sign a sort of a wide forward who can play up front in a two, in the mold of like a Rafa Leão, an Ismail Assar. That you can potentially convert into being a striker. I think that would be an alternative because right now, Vlahovic, he's sitting on one non-penalty goal in 10 games. Tammy Abraham, that a lot of people were very keen on, he's sitting on 2 goals in 10 games. In a Serie A that, you know, Edin Dzeko is plundering in, Giroud is bagging in, you know, Immobile is bagging in, and all these old men are scoring freely, you know. Osimhen, he's going to be costing you upwards of £100 million. And he's probably the one who I think has the most transferable skills. But I also just think it's a complete myth for Arsenal to spend £100 million on any player in any capacity. You know, there was talk of Lautaro Martinez in the summer, but I think now he's very close to signing a new deal with Inter Milan. So I think that one's dead in the water. Striker situation is a tough one. And I think it's just one that we're going to have to watch this space. So Tommy Ajayi won. Big up, Tommy. No, he's a regular Touchy Gooners listener. He said, what is Arsenal's best avenue to qualify for Europe? What signings should we be making in January? So first one, best avenue to qualify for Europe, for me, is always the league. I think the FA Cup is there to get us into Europa, which is nice, but that should always be sort of like a secondary route. I think the biggest and best sign of progress is where you finish in the league and the points that you finish on. I said at the start of the season, just in a few tweets, that I think with no Europe, a sign of progress for me would be to finish on 70 plus points. If you finish on 70 plus points, I think you've done your job. And there's very little else I can really expect of a club in the current position that Arsenal find themselves in. If you get 70 plus points and hope that one of the sort of the four points, 70 to 75 points, and that should be enough to get you into the Europa League at the minimum and Champions League at the maximum, depending on what other clubs do. And that's a good sign of progress. What signings should we be making in January? I think it's imperative we buy a central midfielder. The injuries to Partey, the injuries to Xhaka have shown that we're very light there. As much as I like Maitland-Niles, and I think Lokonga was very, very good in that last game, it's going to be difficult to rely on these guys over the course of a whole season. Partey's going to AFCON in January as well. And I think, you know, from what I was reading, it's going to be from like mid-December that they go to link up. So he's missing potentially 8 games for us. I think it's imperative we buy a centre midfielder. Xhaka's going to be coming back from injury around the same time that Partey's going out. So really and truly, our only two fit centre mids are going to be Lokonga and Maitland-Niles. And I don't think that's going to be enough, especially coming into, you know, the business end of the season. So a centre mid is absolutely imperative. Apart from the top three, this is from Don Mikel 17. You know, Don Mikel, I'm a bit wary with that Twitter app. So let's see what you got. Apart from the top three, we're actually the most consistent team right now. If we get at least 4 points from the next two, thoughts on potential top four? I don't know about the most consistent team. You know, it's a techie one. Unbeaten, you know, but draws against Palace and Brighton with very poor performances in those games. I can't really turn around and say we're the most consistent team. I think we've only really played well, like really well, you know, twice this season. It's not really something I can agree with. I think we've got Leicester away and Watford at home, the next two games. Leicester away, difficult challenge. But, you know, you never know. If you get 3 points at Leicester, I do back us to beat Watford at home, regardless of how we play. They've not been that good this season. They've actually probably been one of the worst teams in the league. But they've got new manager bounce, Ranieri, this, that and the other. Might be a tougher game than we expect. I think 4 points from the next two would be a decent return. Yeah, I can't complain at that. But if we get 6 points, I would say, you know, we're in for a top 6 finish. I think top 4 is too far away for me to try and visualize. Swag LDN12 says, thoughts on that Martinelli left wing experience, and what do you think of his development? Boy, it's looking kind of tough for Martinelli at the moment. I still think he's a good player. Lots of guys in the TG group chat disagree with me. They think he's a bit of a fraud. They think he's fooled us, you know. But I just think he's not a guy for juego de posición, right? I don't think he suits that style of play. I think he needs a bit more freedom to move around, run around, link up with people. I do think he probably is trying a bit too hard now to impress. Against Leeds, I didn't think he was, you know, bad, but he definitely wasn't good. I think when he gets the ball, he gets his head down, he's missing some easy passes, missing some chances to play his teammates through, because I think he really wants to, you know, have an impact on the game and make things happen. It's a tough one, because he's sort of in that bucket between, do we loan him out so he can play every week, but he's probably, you know, the third sub that comes on every week, or second sub that comes on after, you know, Lacazette or someone like that. So it is a difficult one. I don't really know what's happening with Martinelli. I don't really know how we sort this out. I think left wing is not looking like his position. I don't really mind him there. I think he does carry some threat, but, you know, we do need to be seeing a bit more from him. And maybe with the FA Cup, coming in January, he might get a bit more game time as well. But it doesn't look like he's going on loan anywhere anytime soon. So we just need to see him play a bit more. OR_Sue_4 says, are we a team that only wins when the opposition are in bad form? Burnley, Norwich, Spurs, Villa and Leeds are all having bad seasons. Are we about to get an awakening? I think you can only beat who you play in front of you. You know, you can only beat who you play in front of you. You know, we don't make the fixture lists. I do think when we have played teams who, when we have played teams who, I guess, have what I would say good coaches, good managers, that's where we've fallen down. So if you look at, you know, Brentford, Thomas Frank is flying this season. He's looking like a top coach. Obviously, Chelsea, Man City, horror shows, Brighton, and then Crystal Palace, Potter and Vieira, I think, are doing two good jobs. So, you know, I think it is a big test for Arteta against some of these better coaches in the league, you know, to really show that he is or he deserves to be considered amongst them. Because so far this season, I can't say that I'm impressed when we've come up against good coaches with good systems that work. I think, you know, he is getting tested. His in-game management is getting tested. His lineups are getting tested. His tactics are getting tested in those matches especially. And unfortunately, it does look like he's passing those tests. So, you know, I think that's definitely one to say, watch this space. I think, yeah, definitely want to say watch this space, but you know, that is a good point that's been made. So yeah, I think that's all the questions that we have for now. So again, thank you guys for listening. I hope you've appreciated this emergency podcast that we recorded. And I will catch you guys straight after the Leicester game for another post-match. But peace, and thanks again for listening, guys.
Man could have had that fight, but I'm in walk on sight. Man had to grab that mic. You're not gonna spit this time. Trying to work with a good energy. Man trying to work with a bad man vibe. None of these guys can't do that.
It's amazing. It's Aaron Ramsey.
My shine. That's foul. Man,
that's
offside.
The response of Arsenal.
Man crossed the line. Score for my team at the time I play. Where better know when man's
inside. Man Chelsea.
Man can't say I got
simply
the floor, but you can ask
lost
Ian,
their focus in the joy of equalising.
I thought it was Ian Wright, but I weren't seeing right. Man could have had that fight.
Sports Social Podcast Network.